Hi there, and welcome to Healing at Last, the podcast. Healing at Last is the roadmap to uncovering what happened inside you as a result of the pain of your past. How to find it, how to heal it, and how to move beyond it. So let's get started.
So hello, everybody, and welcome. This is the first podcast in the series of, yes, Ms. Thompson. It's the first podcast for the Healing at Last podcast, which launches just this week. So this is the first of the podcasts for this series. So Healing at Last has always been about finding and healing the root cause of our suffering, working with what we are going to talk about today, primary pain, understanding what happened inside us so that we can heal and so we can be free from the pain of the past. So today's podcast is the first in that series. And I am going to talk to the lovely Donna Thompson. You see her here. And Donna is going to take us on her journey of healing primary pain. And we're going to explain all of those terms, all that terminology. So Donna's going to explain her journey with primary pain, her journey with what we now understand as secondary pain. And Donna's also going to explain in what we're hoping to be very kind of intricate detail, explain her journey through sobriety, with sobriety, in seeking the Holy Grail and seeking this lovely, plush, gorgeous life that we're all seeking, this, you know, freedom of the pain within. So Donna's going to talk about that perfectly today, and we're going to have like a lovely two-week conversation. It's going to be about half an hour. So this is really good for anybody that has gone down the sobriety road, that has chosen sobriety as a step in their healing journey. And maybe where you might get stuck in that process, if you are hoping that sobriety will create all of the good stuff. And if that is where you're at, or you're thinking about sobriety, or you're on beginning to put your first foot on the sobriety ladder, then this will be for you. Also, if you have been struggling with primary pain, really difficult primary pain, and you've been trying to get rid of it, and you have fallen into a few traps, then this is also for you. So this is really about helping anybody that is in that difficulty, especially at this time of year. So, and as usual, all your feedback is so welcome. All of and any questions you want to have for Donna that obviously we can't ask now because this is recorded, then just shoot the page a message and I'll ask Donna. Donna's also a therapist in her own right, and we'll talk about that as we move through. But more importantly, we are now going to begin the journey of, yeah, the choosing sobriety and why you chose sobriety as your first role in healing. I think that's a fair question, is it, Don?
Yeah, fair enough. And also, yeah, so I chose sobriety because my drinking was having massive problems on my life. It was affecting me as a therapist, as a mother, as just being like an all-round decent person. Yeah. I escalated really when my son was born, but then my mum passed away about 3 weeks later.
Right.
And but when I think about it, I didn't have a problem with drinking before then, but I did have a massive problem with self-doubt, with lack of confidence, which I now know is from a primary pain. And so I thought that all my problems would disappear if I could just get sober, if I could just stop drinking. And
you had identified the alcohol as the problem, and in effect it was a problem.
It was a problem, yeah. But I used alcohol to soothe these massive feelings that I had inside with the lack of confidence.
Right.
So over time, alcohol did become the problem, and all the products that creates.
Yeah.
The lack of sleep, lack of being present, can't remember things, the hangovers and the crap hair and the nails and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But it got to a point where, so I chose sobriety. Sobriety was going to be the thing that saved me. I'm going to be able to achieve all the things that I've ever wanted to achieve and get rid of all this. I'll have my confidence back. I'll be great at this. I'll be a fantastic therapist. And so that was my holy grail. The holy grail was sobriety. Yeah. And I did it 100%. I finally managed to do it. I tried a lot of times over the previous 10 years, 5 years more seriously before actually stopping drinking. I got there. I'd achieved something, which was something I realized was achievement was something I was always striving for.
Yeah.
Confidence. Yeah. To be a good therapist, to be a good just to be better at what I was. And I was beginning to help a lot more clients as well in my original modality, hypnotherapy, in achieving sobriety as well, but not really feeling quite, there was always something more.
Yeah.
I could help them to get sober. Really good at it, but then they'd be saying, right, what about the anxiety now then?
Okay, so like in a way what you're saying is that the alcohol had created difficulties sleeping, difficulties with memory, difficulties with lethargy, difficulties, all of these difficulties, and there's a lot more difficulties than just that, we know that, but the main reason that you were using alcohol was to kind of manage these inner feelings. They weren't the original, they weren't the problem per se. The problem was the not sleeping, the problem was the not thinking straight, the problem was the bad hair, the bad nails. And your assumption was that if I get sober, then this is a clean sweep. This is a, you know, you mentioned confidence. Confidence will be good. I'll feel better about myself. And then when you go and achieve that, you actually achieve sobriety, which is massive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not to underestimate the actual effort it takes for sobriety to work, or for you to work it. So you'd achieve sobriety, and the lift that that must have gave you.
Oh, yeah, incredible. Like I say, you know, I had a massive sense of achievement.
Yeah.
I felt for a time that I could do anything, and this is where I want to go. I want to help people be sober. And so I did. So this is where the lack of confidence came in, because all the wonderful things. Yeah, I mean, not maybe today with the hair, but nails all the good things that sobriety brings. I'm not disrespecting that at all. And anyone who can do it and who has done it, huge respect for them. But I was okay. So in order for me to be able to tell the world about how I'd done it and how I could help them do it, I had to put myself out there, right? Yeah. And I couldn't do that.
Yeah. And that's not something that the sobriety took away.
No.
That's the confidence issue. That's
exactly, yeah. But you spend you kind of spend so long in trying to push down the feelings with alcohol, that the original feelings that you drank alcohol for are kind of forgotten in sobriety.
Wow.
Makes sense?
Yeah, let me read, because I think that's brilliant. The original feelings that you used alcohol to numb, to soothe, the shutdown. Once you get into sobriety, you have this newfound confidence that you've done something. You have this newfound, you know, delight in yourself that you're manic. But the reason that you began drinking in the first place hasn't come to bear yet, because you're basking in the goodness that you're getting out of sobriety. You're swimming in your newfound delight at yourself, but the core issues, they haven't shown themselves yet.
And yeah, exactly. And moments of, yeah, that whisper. Yeah. What if?
Okay.
If we take our eye off the ball, you know, we don't go back to how it was before.
Wow.
So not obvious at first, but when it got to a point in sobriety and the original, you know, basking in the glory of this is what I've done.
Yeah.
wears off a little bit, and you kind of think, okay, so where's my big confidence?
Right.
Why can't I put myself out there and tell people how I've done it? And that was when that's when the fear came in.
Right.
I couldn't do it. I could do sobriety. I could tell people one-to-one how I can help them. But for me to be able to tell and help more people in the wider scheme of things was just, I can't do this, because then that means I have to be seen.
Wow.
I have to be heard. And I have to know what I'm talking about. And do I really know this stuff? And that's when it hit me, you know, the lack of confidence and just the not enoughness. And I am not confident enough to do this, really birthed.
Wow. So this confidence, lack of, this who am I question, this capability question, the energy that will come from that, the feelings that will come from that, the language that will come from that, all flooded under your work life. Mm-hmm. But was that energy, was that emotional content, was that lack, was that enoughness, not enoughness? Had that been, whilst you're talking about it from a career point of view, from a work point of view, had that been part of your experience, your personal experience through the years?
Years and years. This was way before I took up alcohol. It's way before my mum passed away. It was way before my son was born. I recognize it showing up in as I've worked in it now, I can honestly say that I am 55 now, and I think it's been almost 50 years. Well, wow. Say 50 years, because until recently.
Yeah.
That's so, a time to hold that.
Wow. So you have this this lack, we'll just use one word for it, lack. Lack in self, lack of belief, lack of possibility, lack, that you use drink to cover, but then forgot about it because you were basking in the glory of all of the greatness of what it is to be sober. And then this lack comes and boom, as a sucker punch.
Yeah.
And hits you square in the face again.
Exactly, yeah. And there's another kind of like parallel to that, because the way that I'd always, other than alcohol, the way that I'd always been able to fill that lack, to ease that lack, and in a professional sense, I'll do more training.
Yeah.
Give me confidence. That'll mean that I'll be able to do this, do that, you know, tell more people about how I can help them. CPD days, devouring anything I could on, you know, the profession, on sobriety, on education, in that kind of thing. And that was just another solution to the pain.
Wow. Let's stop there. Brilliant, right? So what you're saying is that you had this primary pain. We're calling it lack. I think so many people listening to this will be able to say, I hear that. You had this primary pain that was 50-odd year old. That the way that you managed it down through the years was to strive. The way that you managed was to educate. The way that you managed, it was very kind of healthy way of managing it. You know, it wasn't difficult. And your word was beautiful, devoured. I devoured anything that I could, devoured CPD, devoured. And so you're continually growing in one sense. You're getting better as a therapist. You're getting better at what you do. But yet this lack isn't coming down, isn't dissolving. And so what you're doing basically is that you're trying to soothe this lack. Alcohol is also trying to soothe this lack, but alcohol makes it worse, because alcohol can only make it worse. Then you get sobriety, you feel better for a while, it's nearly like the lack is covered up for a bit, and then boom, you're back in it again. You're back in the lack, you're back in that that difficulty. Am I understanding that?
Yeah, it's what you call the hope hurt despair cycle constantly. But on, you know, for me, it was on two parallel kind of universes. you know, one with the drinking, and then that finally stopped, but in sobriety it was still going on. In sobriety I was still, you know, so okay, so why am I not happy, why am I not achieving, why do I not feel like I'm out of this stuckness? Okay, I'll do more sobriety, I'll read more, I'll watch more, you know, all these YouTubers and Instagrammers telling me how wonderful sobriety was, and I'm like, yeah, it is, but where's the but? Why are you not saying the but? Because I have a but, and they didn't, and then so I blame myself, you know. What am I doing wrong? Why can I not get this joy that you have
continuously? And the reason that you couldn't is because this primary pain was active, and nipping and shouting and roaring and demanding for attention, and there was no way in God's earth was any sobriety or any amount of CPD, because they were just the solutions.
Oh, I was really good at finding solutions.
Brilliant, but not the solution to the primary pain.
Exactly, and that is exhausting. That is that's the thing that's, I suppose, more torturous than anything else, because you're trying and you're not getting anywhere, wading through mud. I was thinking about this today, actually. I was thinking that I don't know. I'd like to think that I would, just trying to think of my thoughts before I say them. I don't know what I would have done if I hadn't have done the, you know, the hearing and the clearing with you. I'd like to think that I was strong enough to still be in sobriety. But I can imagine that it could have quite easily not, because you get to a point where you kind of say, what's the point? You know, this is just so bloody hard. How am I ever going to get out?
Because the thing that you're seeking isn't just nice nails and nice hair. The thing that you're seeking isn't just, you know, a sense of, aren't I great, I'm sober. The thing that you're seeking isn't just, you know, not a hangover and clarity of thoughts, everything that sobriety gives you. What you're also seeking is to be free from, as you call it, the stuckness. You're seeking to be free from this lack of possibility in you or for you. But that's not, you don't understand that in the middle of choosing sobriety. You don't understand that as you're seeking solutions. You just think that these, all of these things are going to give you this feeling of greatness, but then it doesn't come, and then you're exhausted, and then you're deflated, and then you blame yourself, because there's nobody in God's earth that blames their therapist or the coach, and or they blame the modality. What was that?
All sobriety.
No, you don't blame that. You don't blame that. You blame yourself. And as you say, as you hear, because what we're fundamentally talking about theoretically is that we're talking about primary pain that creates secondary pain. So primary pain, when you're in primary pain, and Donna's talking about primary pain in terms of, you know, lack, then you choose something that takes away that primary pain, and you chose CPD and you chose alcohol to take away that. Then that alcohol becomes a problem. Then it becomes secondary pain. So you were very brave, and most people listening to this will be very brave at removing the secondary problem. And being delighted that they've removed, maybe it's gambling, maybe it's drink, maybe it's eating, doesn't matter what it is, it's really irrelevant. But for you, you remove that secondary problem, but now you're looking square primary problem.
Yeah. And also that to add that, you know, the sobriety can also be a secondary pain, or it can be a distraction from healing the primary pain, because you become so hyper focused. And like I say, you know, when you've done sobriety for a bit and you still not got the confidence and you're still experiencing anxiety and you still feel the lack, then yeah, you know, you double down. I doubled up on sobriety and I did more of sobriety and I went headlong back into it. Well, not back into it, just because constantly managing the sobriety thing, that it became it became almost, I suppose, a new addiction. Maybe addiction's not the right word, but you get what I mean. You know, it's the, if I focus on this a little bit harder, then surely I'm going to get to where I want to be.
And that did not come.
No. Mm-hmm.
And then, it didn't come that way. It didn't come through the seeking of the solution and say, and it didn't come through the secondary pain. It didn't come through the seeking of the solution to the primary pain and those two avenues that you had cultivated over X amount of years.
Yeah.
So then you begin to see, this is my problem. Do you remember that? Do you remember the turning into the primary pain? Do you remember that as a moment or a time? Tell me about that.
Well, I'd kind of, in seeking a solution to the pain was, you know, more CPD, more learning, more. And then our mutual friend recommended that I watched your TED talk. And then that kind of, and I have to admit, in all honesty, that I watched a workshop on the emotional mastery, and then I signed up, and the emotional mastery course, the program, was another solution. If I just do this on a course, then I'm gonna find a solution for myself. Because you know I can't go to another therapist with this because it's not massive trauma, and you know I should be able to sort it out myself. But if I just do this course, I can help myself, and I'll be able to talk about it to people that are going to need my help. Yeah.
And where did you end up?
I've ended up here with you tonight.
Yes, because you ended up straight back looking straight at yourself again.
I started to understand how what I was seeking, the solutions were just a temporary way of distracting me from the primary pain. And it took me quite a long time actually to get into that place where I was finally able to get to, you know, the root cause and the primary pain.
So let's talk about root cause and primary pain, because now you're not focused on CPD. You know, now you're not focused on sobriety. Now what you've done is a U-turn back towards yourself.
Yeah.
And you're staring down the barrel of what you brilliantly call lack. And you're looking straight at it. You're not focused in sobriety. Whilst you haven't thrown the baby out of the bathwater, you're still sober. But you're not focused on it. You're not doubling down on it. You're not looking for any more courses. You're now starting to do some inner work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you find a therapist who's primary pain focused.
Yeah.
And won't let you look at anything else.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Imagine meeting somebody that won't let you look at anything else.
Yeah.
And so you're turned on. What do you see? What do you come to? What is that primary pain? What is that root cause?
Oh, gosh. Well, the reason I knew there was a root cause, and it was in the same area of when, so I will, like, you know, share this. It was a defectiveness, a lacking me that is like anybody else. When I was 6 years old, I contracted measles, and it left me profoundly long-sighted. I mean, actually, consider myself lucky because some kids, you know, had it worse off than me, but I was left profoundly long-sighted. It affected my eyesight so badly that a consultant that we went to see, and I was only little, so it was only fragments of memories of it, suggested that there was nothing that he could do for me, and suggested that my parents put me into a school for the blind, because otherwise she would always struggle in mainstream, you know, educational places. And my parents were shocked. No, they're not going to do that. And actually, that wasn't really, that was an experience in itself. but it didn't actually cement until I was at primary school in a school play, and I was urged to take part in this play. I was still only like 6 or 7, and I didn't want to do it. I just wanted to be involved in props, and so I was the person that was holding up a cardboard tree in the background, but I was looking out at these my classmates all dressed up, having fun, playing parts in the school play, and I was hiding because yeah. I had these glasses on me, profoundly long-sighted. In those days, there was none of this lens thinning technology. They were thick, they were heavy. I could see the frame constantly in front of my eyes. I was uncomfortable and I was embarrassed of myself. And I could peeped out from the tree, and I remember this more clearly now. I remember seeing the parents and teachers watching these adorable kids having fun and messing up the lines and tripping up and just being really cute and lovely, and believing that at that moment that I would never be like them. I would never have confidence like them. I think the first thing that I came up with in therapy with you was I'm defective.
Wow, Donna. I am defective. Wow.
I lack what it takes to be like them.
Wow. Just pause a wee second there. Just in those early days, in those early moments, in those early experiences, that's what it did to you. That's what it did inside you. That's what it made you believe about yourself. That's what you said about yourself. That's what you believed. That's what you thought. That's what you felt. But now it's ingrained in your body. And it is I am defective. I will never be like them.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
The words of the consultant saying she is always going to struggle, you know, that kind of added to it as well. And, you know, we've talked about this before, you know, so no one knew back in the 70s in a small village town in the depths of West Yorkshire that, you know, there's going to be contact lenses and there's going to be technologies and all this kind of
possibilities.
Yeah, possibilities. So I didn't have, let's say that I didn't have the co-regulation from my parents to make me feel better about that situation because they didn't know. They just didn't know.
And this is really important because, you know, when you talk about your parents, you talk about a loving family unity. You talk about no transgenerational trauma. You talk about a central place of love and connection and wellness and okayness, but yet this trauma is still birthed through you. This belief about yourself and your position in this world is still birthed through you. It's still an experience. And you know, I think that's one of the big difficulties with trauma-informed care is that we are sometimes we are taught to look for the big stuff. Now, you know, measles and long-sightedness and school for the blind is big stuff, but and it severely impacted upon you. But what you're saying is that was on and against the backdrop of a beautiful family, the backdrop of no other trauma, the backdrop of no other newsworthy information, and it did that type of damage to you. I think that's really important. Yeah. And so brave of you to say it like this.
I was loved, but they didn't have they didn't have the knowledge, they didn't have the information. You know, I always remember one of the most consistent things my parents used to say was, let's hope for the best, prepare for the worst. And now I think, what kind of message is that? So I'll prepare for the worst, which is what our brains are, you know, wired
to do.
So what did I prepared for the worst. I used to do things like, close my eyes, take my glasses off, close my eyes and try and pretend to be blind, because I always thought that one day I'm going to go blind. So I used to practice closing my eyes and navigating my way around the living room for the one day that I might go blind.
We were waiting on it.
Yeah.
So we're waiting on that worst case scenario on top of this lack, on top of this defect, on top of this not like them, never like them, never amount to what they are.
Yeah. Yes.
And so this, not go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, and then, and the, there was also the, that also the whisper again, what's the point? What's the point?
Don't bother. You'll never amount it. Yeah. So you have this. So what Dawn has just done there for anybody listening is described beautifully. The recall, she's described the essence of the layering of emotion and language and nervous system activation and defense systems and all sorts of stuff that is lodged in our body and directing and dictating lack, 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 lack. She beautifully, bravely walking you through her primary pain for which she had all of these solutions for.
Yeah.
And so you can see where if you began, so if you think about this, right, you can understand on it why CPD would give you some possibility of the future, because now that you have this information, you could do this, you could. So it would create some sort of possibility and hope.
Yep.
So you could see where that was feeding this solution of CPD or solution of new training, or would, you could see where it would just hit that spot right away, and you could see where alcohol would just switch off all that stuff.
Yep.
And you could see where sobriety would be like, you know, how great am I? And look at the possibilities in me. So they all spoke perfectly as short-term solution to this inner pain.
Yeah.
Perfect.
And also, I think that the, just a point there that you mentioned was that even though I had this pain in me, that, you know, the possibility that I could go blind, that I'd never achieve, that I'd always struggle, there's also the potential and the possibility, and you know, that achievement of sobriety was like, wow,
yeah, look at,
I can do this.
Yes, they fed that beautifully.
They said I'd struggle, but so it's the opposite of what the wound is saying.
Yeah, well, that's why it's primary pain and secondary pain, because then the secondary pain is that it's alcohol which covers it, and then sobriety creates more possibility from that. So you're just forever more just shifting and moving across that, moving away from that primary pain. But now we see the primary pain in all its focus. So turning to that and seeing that and working in that and undoing that. I know that it's, you know, we have a tendency to skip past the hard stuff. That's the hard stuff. But was working on that primary pain any harder than continuing this continuous hope, hurt, despair cycle?
Oh, I have to say that working in the primary pain was difficult sometimes, but it was short term compared to the years of endless torture, distraction, difficulty, that it's worth it.
Yeah. Do you feel turning on it was worth it?
Oh my gosh, yeah. It's like, you know, like I said before, I don't know where I would be now if I hadn't have done that. I would like to think that I would be somewhere different, but I can't honestly say that I would. I don't know. And that's where I think that people get to the point where maybe, is this sobriety worth it? Is this, you know, life worth it? Is this difficulty really worth all the effort of being hurt again? And I have hope and I find a solution and it hasn't worked, and then we do it all again.
Yeah.
Because it's exhausting.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And so turning yourself on the primary pain was difficult, but worth it.
Well, I don't know if it's kind of like looking, it's trying to remember now how difficult it was. I know that sometimes it was, whoa, what's she getting me to do now? I don't know if, do I have to really think about this now? And what about this? And what about that? And what about the other? And all the stuff that comes up. But it was a necessary excavation of all the stuff that I'd layered. And I knew that it was the right way to go because I finally felt for the first time in a long time that easing of my feelings. I'd had a constant feeling of dis-ease. I'd say it was anxiety, but I never had panic attacks. And I never had complete dissociation. I had something in the middle that was always there. And then when I had a thought or a, you know, I found a solution, I'm gonna do this, I can't do a workshop because I'm gonna have to be seen, I'm gonna have to be heard, and that fear would come up, that
cough. Because what would happen was that would trigger the woundedness in you from childhood, yeah. Which is, I am defective, I can never be like them, they will see me. They will see my defectiveness. Mm-hmm. If I put myself forward, if I put myself out, if I try to be seen, if I try to grow in my career, then it hits that wound. So as you start to work with that wound and that dissipates, then I'm imagining the byproduct, and you'll tell me, of that is allowing yourself to be seen.
Yeah, yeah.
Evidence here.
Look at me now.
Yes, allowing yourself to be seen. And not only allowing yourself to be seen in this positive, wonderful light, but actually even allow your defectiveness to be seen shows the level of healing. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
And the ease in my body and the lack of scramble in my thoughts is such a joy.
There's the joy. There's the joy you were seeking, the possibility. So as you started to clear that, because that's what we call, that's why it's the clear method, as you started to clear that primary pain, and I'm asking a question that I know the answer to, but I'm asking it for everybody else that's listening. It wasn't like it wasn't like a light switch. It's like a slow kind of undoing and then becoming. Would that be fair?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lovely, I'm saying lovely now. I think sometimes it was quite difficult. But I think it's a lovely constant understanding of the process within.
Yeah.
And then when you get to a point where you think, now this is different, that's when you
start to notice yourself being different, doing different.
Yeah, feeling different.
Yeah.
Approaching things differently when things don't affect you as much as what they used to do. Situations that you react to in a different way. Events, people, you know.
Wow.
That you react to in a different way than what you used to.
So this defectiveness, this lack, where is that now?
Oh. I don't know. No, the defectiveness and the lack has gone. You know, I can honestly say that sometimes get a little bit, is that excited? Yeah. Is it nervous? Yeah. But it's in a good way about moving forward and doing things. But in no way is it right. Okay. I'm just going to go tidy up. Well, I'm just going to sort something out. Or I'm just going to, you know, procrastinate for a little while this feeling goes and I find a solution for another one not to work.
Yeah. Can I just share this? I hope you don't mind me sharing this, but I don't think you will. When we decided to work together, whenever it was that we decided to work therapeutically together, I remember you saying to me, and I know you won't mind me saying this. I remember you saying, I said, well, how will you know that it has worked? How will you know in the end, you know, that we've got to where we got to? And you said, when I have a dirty drawers. And we're not talking about the drawers that you put on, we're talking about the drawers in the cupboards. But when I have dirty drawers, when not everything's perfect, when everything's not organized in the night of its life, because that's what you were doing, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, everything was perfect because you were attending, you weren't doing what you wanted to do. You weren't putting yourself out there. You weren't growing. You weren't developing your business. You weren't doing any of that. Mm-hmm. What you were doing, because you were afraid to be seen. You were afraid that they would see your defectiveness. So what you did was that you tidied the drawers.
Yeah. Anything to ease this discomfort that I felt in my body that told me that I was about to do something fearful. Yeah. And that was unbearable.
Go ahead.
Something fearful, as in, I'm going to have to do something now to be seen, to be heard, to stand up.
Yeah.
And I don't want to do that because it's so painful. So I'll just go organize another cupboard.
Yeah. Yeah. And can we just tell those that are listening, I think it's a lovely way to end this. How's those cupboards?
They're a lot messier now.
And for everybody listening to this, this might sound like we're poking fun. We're not. The messy cupboards are a direct response to feeling brave enough to be seen, to be feeling brave enough, not defective, not lacking, and to be putting yourself out, mm-hmm. and not having to distract yourself from the pain anymore. Because you're free from the primary pain.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's amazing. Yeah.
And that's where, you know, you and I are now obviously huge advocates of working in primary pain. And that's where the focus of your work is and will be over the next few years, is there? Yeah. Is that fair to say?
Fair to say, absolutely, yeah. We can skirt around in the secondary pain for months and months and months if you want, but it's not going to get you where you want to be.
Yeah. Ooh. And so are you only focused, or where are you focused, and where's the majority of your work focused now?
The majority of my work is focused on people who are in sobriety or in any kind of recovery. I've got another couple of addiction clients who are not alcohol addiction,
yeah.
who have managed to abstain, to get into a good place with it, feel solid, but know that there's more work to do. So I help people who are struggling at the other end, at the other side of addiction, at the other side of sobriety, and want to be free, not have to maintain this constant state of sobriety all the time and manage it. Yeah. So because
they want to do the inner primary pain work.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And how rewarding is that for you now, Donna, knowing the difference that it really makes?
It's really rewarding. It's really lovely to see. I love the glow that I've got about myself with it, and I want that for more people. And I have actually seen results in clients so far who are getting to the point where it's just not at the end of their sessions, their treatment, but it's so close.
Wow.
I'm so excited about it that, yeah, it's insight and it's just wonderful.
Just to be primary pain focused.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Root cause, primary pain, core wound.
Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. And to help them journey where you were and to know what's possible. It must be gorgeous.
Yeah. It's lovely. Yeah.
Well done. Well done, you. So well done. That was gorgeous. Probably longer than we thought, but lovely. A lovely look at what it is to be in primary pain, the things that we do to cover that primary pain, and your particular expertise is in addiction, in different forms of addiction, including alcohol, and to be stuck in that secondary pain of addiction, and then maybe to get past it, and then to kind of full circle,
yeah.
back right in to the primary pain, so that you can be free and that you don't have to keep looking over your shoulder. Yeah. How gorgeous!
Yeah.
Oh, lovely, Donna. So I'm hopeful that this is helpful for everybody listening, watching, anybody that's stuck in the trap of secondary pain that is exhausted, as Donna says, that hope, hurt, despair cycle. And yeah, I'll put Donna's details below this video if anybody wants to reach out, that you may be in that position. Just to say, as also Donna's not only did work with me personally, but Donna's also part of our training, the Clearer Method specialists that'll be released in January 2023, very soon, Donna, released out into the world. So I'll put Donna's details if anybody wants to get in contact with Donna or ask any more questions or ask me any questions, you can do that. So just to say thanks, Donna. Thank you very much for being part of this, our first podcast.
Thank you.
Hopefully that explains perfectly primary and secondary pain. All right, my love, thank you.
Thank you.
Much love. Thank you.